All right, it is 6:30. Welcome to Planning Commission, and we have Commissioner Jorgensen online, right? And you can hear us?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes, I'm here.
Great, thank you for being here. We will start with any public comments. No, none from D. All right, we will move to agenda item 3 into our work session. Sherry.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed your reading from last time. So exciting. So just a couple things I wanted to go over tonight. I wanted to go over this. This is an outline of what has changed in the state code with relationships to subdivision review. Again, this has to be adopted in our code before February 1st of next year. So state code has changed this for single family, two family, and townhome developments, which you could see if that little block wasn't there on the screen there. Okay, anyway, subdivision. So the concept or plan review can only be reviewed by staff, and it's actually voluntary. It cannot be reviewed by Planning Commission or City Council anymore. And then the concept plan has to be, if they request review for a concept plan, the developer, we have to give him a pre-application meeting within 15 business days. We have to provide copies of all the applicable regulations and standards, all our preliminary and final checklists, and give them feedback on the concept. The next review that comes in a subdivision is our preliminary plan review. And the state code now requires us to designate an administrative land use authority, which can be the Planning Commission or it can be staff, but it cannot be City Council. So once this is changed, subdivisions will only come to the Planning Commission for preliminary plan review. The state code provides it doesn't have to be the Planning Commission. It can actually be staff too if the City Council wanted to adopt the ordinance that way. We're not recommending that. We think that it's good for them to come to at least one Planning Commission meeting instead of just doing it at a staff level. So we will be presenting a proposal to have minor subdivisions reviewed by staff for preliminary, just like we already review lot line adjustments. So you never see a lot line adjustment. You see a plat amendment that changes a lot line because we have to vacate a public utility easement. But if it's just a boundary line agreement, those don't actually ever come to the Planning Commission. Those are handled all administratively. What is new in the state code is that the administrative land use authority, whether it's staff or whether it's the Planning Commission, it specifically says that you may receive public comment if you would like on subdivision applications. And it says you may hold a public hearing, but no more than one public hearing. So before, the state code did not allow any public hearings on subdivisions. They're supposed to be administratively held. So that's kind of new if that was something that you wanted to do. I'm not recommending it. I don't think it's necessary. I mean, a subdivision, if they file a subdivision plat and it meets all the minimum standards, then we're supposed to approve it. There's no discretion in the approval process for a subdivision. And then final plat, now that is specific in state code that can be processed at the same time a preliminary plat, but it cannot require Planning Commission or City Council approval. So City Council, beyond adoption of the subdivision ordinance, will not ever see a subdivision unless it's being unless it's part of a zone change or a legislative decision where they have to enter into a development agreement for the zone change, like we do with our P districts. Then they would see it, but they wouldn't be approving it. They would just be approving the legislative action of that particular development process. So just to go over the proposed amendments that we have. So as I explained to you last time, the way that the ordinance is written right now, we have Chapter 3 in Title 10, which is our process chapter. It talks about code amendments. It talks about zone map amendments and subdivision processes. And then we have Chapter 7, which is actually the conditional use permit chapter, but also the subdivision chapter, and it has all of the guidelines for a subdivision and for conditional uses. So we're going to separate those out, have Chapter 3 only be the processes for zone changes and code and map amendments, zone changes and code amendments. Chapter 7 will be entirely conditional use permits, and A new Title 13 will be the subdivision process. So I'm taking the language out of the existing code, putting it into this new Title 13, and making it so that it's all in one spot. They still have to abide by all of the Title 10 rules as far as the lot sizes and frontage widths and all of that, but the actual processing for subdivisions and the standards for street design and those things have to be in a subdivision title, so they'll be in Title 13. Any questions about that reorganization? Okay. Oops. I don't know. Apparently the button got stuck. Let's try that again. All right, so this is chapter three. So I have inserted some language that gives statutory authority to the city council to amend the title and the zoning map in the first section in 10.3.1 and 10.3.2 just updates the language and submittal requirements. It is also updating the noticing requirements for these types of applications because they are legislative in nature. The state code has recently been changed as well to now everything that requires a public notice is either a Class A notice or a Class B notice. A Class A notice is a notice that gets posted at City Hall, posted on the city's website, and posted on the public notice website. A Class B notice is a direct notice for a legislative action or for some other kind of direct notice that's specified in various sections of state code. And you have to do everything you did as a Class A notice, and a Class B notice is a direct notice, and then mail a direct notice to any affected entities or property owners. So with that, do you have any questions or comments about the actual verbiage as it's drafted in Chapter 3?
Anybody have any comments for Chapter 3? Okay.
Okay.
Thank Great. You, Sherry.
That one's a pretty simple one. Okay, so Chapter 1 of Title 13 for the new subdivision ordinance. So the first chapter in this new title basically just goes over your... it gives you the short title, the introduction, your purpose and intent, your conflicts and severability, all that legal jargon that you've got to put into an ordinance that we're missing right now in our current ordinance, and then also establishes the appeal authority for any actions or decisions made regarding the subdivision process. Are there any questions about that? That's all new language, so it's not redlined in your copy because it is all new. It's pretty standard boilerplate legal stuff, recycled and improved from other people's codes. Okay, Chapter 2.
So I had one comment on the on the introduction on 13-1-20. It just seemed subjective to me. I know we talk about it later. The amenities that are required, the facilities that are required to be provided later in the purpose and intent, do we want to refer to that section and say this is what you have to provide for your subdivision?
So tell me which line for you.
That's
probably the easiest way.
I was just looking at all of paragraph A.
Paragraph in 13.1-20?
Yeah.
Okay. And then tell me again what you were thinking.
I didn't have like exact wording edits. I just made a note that when I read it, it seemed like subjective. It's things that a developer could provide, where our intent is for them to meet all of those requirements. So I would just refer to them to section 13.130, where we list them in more detail.
So. Not all of the things in the 13.1.20 would actually be something that's required. It might be something that let's say they were going to build a new park. If we went back in time to when Foxborough was approved, or even the initial phases of Eaglewood of the Eaglewood subdivisions.
Okay.
When the developer donated or dedicated land for the golf course or for Legacy Park or any of the smaller pocket parks that were becoming public parks. Those weren't necessarily a requirement in the subdivision ordinance that said, hey, you have to give us this park. That was a negotiation that they made on their zone changes, but it wasn't a requirement of the subdivision ordinance. So a developer could be putting in a park. It could be a park that they're proposing to dedicate to the public, or it could be a park that they're proposing be HOA owned. And so it would need to be shown, but we don't have a specific requirement that says every subdivision has to have a park. So that's why those are kind of just the intent of, we want all of those things, if you're going to have them, to be shown, but they're not necessarily going to be required.
Okay, fair enough. That's how I read it.
Okay, great. Any other questions on chapter one? Or comments or typos or... Chapter 2 is the administrative section of the subdivision ordinance. So essentially, this goes through and talks about why it's required to, why we have subdivision control, why it's required to have plat approval. And most of this language in these first few sections come from our existing Title 10, Chapter 7. So there's just very few changes. Of course, changing the language from the approval to the administrative land use authority, which is a requirement of the new state code that we establish an administrative land use authority specifically. So those are pretty straightforward as far as that, those things go. Kind of some, it identifies, you know, when they can get building permits, at what point they have to have everything done, and specifies the penalties for making a subdivision without a plat approval. All of that kind of falls back on state code.
Can you remind me who the land use authority will be?
So the administrative land use authority for preliminary plan will be the Planning Commission. And so that's where there's some definitions in there. Let's see, or was that in chapter one? Let me just look here. Oh, right. So in chapter one on page 5, we have the definition of administrative land use authority down at the bottom, E. And it talks about when the Planning Commission acts as the administrative land use authority. It also defines what our development review staff is. One of the things that we do every Monday, we have a group of staff that we call the Development Review Committee. And you might be wondering why I didn't call it Development Review Committee in here, because any committee or board created by an ordinance or statute is subject to the Open and Public Meetings Act, which means we would have to post an agenda, record the meetings, take minutes, approve minutes, post them within 3 days of them being approved, all for an internal staff meeting. And so we're very careful to state that it's Development Review staff and it's not a committee. But we will act as a committee, so things won't change at all. It'll be directed by the city manager as to who should be involved in those reviews, and it will be applicable for, depending on the type of development. So we can invite to those meetings South Davis Water if somebody's doing a subdivision that's in their service area. If there's something that we feel like South Davis Sewer wants to contribute or talk about, they are invited to those meetings. Fire District is a separate entity. They're invited to every one of our development review meetings. So just so you understand how that works.
Thank you.
Okay, so then we move to chapter 3, which is on page 11, and this is our concept plan. I've tried to highlight the areas that were all new language and then redline the areas that were existing language in our code with the changes that are being made here. So some of the things that are pretty important to put in the code that we don't have right now is to specifically say that concept plan review is not required, but it's highly recommended and encouraged, because I think it's really important to have a concept plan review with developers so they know what they need to do to meet the ordinances. It helps them, and that's the intention of it. It's not to give them necessarily our opinion on whether we like their subdivision or anything. It's just to go over what the codes are and the processes that they'll be going through. That specifically tells them that the concept plan review is non-binding. So one of the things that we don't want to have happen is somebody comes in and they have a napkin drawing of a subdivision, and we say, yeah, that looks like that'll work. And then by the time they finally get around to hiring an engineer and submitting an application for preliminary plan, maybe we've changed the ordinance. Maybe we sat there and met with them and said, well, the minimum lot size is 7,000 square feet. And then 3 months later, we changed it to the minimum lot size of 10,000 square feet. They come back in a year later and they've brought in their seventh. They're saying, well, we're vested because we came and talked to you about concept plan. So what we want to make sure is that they understand they're not vested until they file a complete preliminary plan application, so that that on that day when they file a complete application, that's the way the ordinance is written in that day is the rules that they have to abide by to get that approved. We can't change the rules on them halfway through. And then, so I go on to the submission section. Again, a lot of this is just cleanup of the existing language that we have, modernizing some of the things, like we don't need to have paper Mylar submitted to us anymore. We want everything to come in electronically. But there are still certain standards that they need to be drawn to. We need the topography, we need the scale at a certain size. We need all of those things that help us to give them the feedback that they want in a concept plan review. And then again, the concept plan review is optional for single family, two family, and townhome developments. We can make it required for commercial developments to come in and do that. I think that's pretty important if it's a commercial or industrial development that they do have a concept plan review. But under state code, it's only it's just voluntary and at their request. And then, so these checklists are just notifications and what we need to do once we complete the conceptual plan review, and then kind of puts a time frame on that. If they come in for a conceptual plan review and then they wait 2 years, we want them to do a concept plan review over again because the code may have changed. If the code hasn't changed, that's one thing, but standards may have changed. And one thing that I just want to tell you about as we move through this, that if they are in an area that has known geologic hazards, or this subdivision is in our sensitive lands overlay zone, then there these timing reviews that the state code puts on us are out the window, basically, because we can take whatever time that we need to make sure that the geohazards have been addressed properly. In the state code, it says that we can only go through 4 review cycles with the applicants. When we submit to them red lines, and they, we have to, they're now specific rules, and I think that these rules have been put in place because there are some municipalities out there that aren't being forthright or aren't doing a very good job when they're processing these types of applications. So now on the red lines and then on a separate written document, we have to tell them what each corrective action they need to take is, and then they have to respond and say, this is what we did to address number 1 all the way through number 30. And if they don't address all 30 of those things, that review cycle is not complete and we don't do another review until they have completed everything on that list. So it kind of puts them, it gives them the information they need from us, but it also guarantees that we get a response back, because a lot of times we'll send out red lines. For instance, on the site plan approval for the Come and Go gas station, through about, 7-8 revisions, the city engineer has made a comment on the driveway and some concrete that they were putting in the park strip that it can't be there. And every iteration that came back on the drawings, it's still there. Without ever answering why they think they don't need to take it off, even though she's told them over and over again to take it off, They haven't done that, and this will fix that now, because we can just say, hey, we're not going to start a new review to make sure you've made everything until you tell us why you haven't done this one thing, and that's going to hold them up. So it makes it a level and fair playing field for both the developer and the city review staff. We get our stuff addressed, and they can get their opportunity to address each one of those things in writing too. So we're kind of excited for these code changes. And do you have any questions about the concept plan chapter?
I have one just tiny comment.
Okay.
In section 40, submission paragraph B2, we're requiring a 24 by 36 electronic. If it's electronic, why do we care about size?
I don't know. Okay. I was trying to figure out how to say it, but when we open up the documents in Bluebeam to review it, it is a different resolution at that size. And so I wasn't quite sure how to say that, because we didn't want it on paper, but we want it graphically, because when they do print it and print the actual Mylar, it will be on the 24 by 36. So I'm not sure about how that should be stated yet. I need to get some advice from engineering folks.
Yeah. Okay, I was just curious if we weren't requiring them to print it then.
So that's why we say that, so that it's formatted that way, and maybe that's something formatted that it can be printed on a 24 by 36. So maybe that's a good way to say that, actually. Thanks for helping me work that through my brain.
Sherry, is there any background as to why the state made the changes?
So it's all going to be, it's all conjecture, of course. But I do think it has to do with some cities out there, and we don't know who those cities are from the League of Cities and Towns and our work sessions that we've done on these things. There are stories that get whispered to legislators that certain cities aren't playing fair, and they're changing the rules on people. So when they come in and apply for a subdivision, maybe it's taking 2 years to get that subdivision approved, when it really should maybe take 3 months. But because they submit something, and then they're saying, and this is what they're whispering through via the Home Builders Association, that we get our red lines, we submit a correction that has all of the red lines fixed, and then they do another review, and they're all new things that they're correcting us on that were on the first plat, that they had the opportunity to say something about the first review cycle. But now they've made up new things just as delay tactics to keep things from getting approved. And so they won't specifically come out and say which cities it is, because, you know, from our perspective on the planning side of it, we're like, well, if you would tell us which cities are not that are doing these things, then what happens is you can go to that city and find out, oh, well, maybe the reason is because they don't have professional staff. You know, they have to send it out for a review, or they're overworked. They don't have enough staff they don't have enough planners, and they don't have enough engineers on staff. And so the workload is so high that it's taking them months and months and months just to get these reviews done. And so it could be a funding issue that needs to go, somebody needs to go talk to their city council and say, hey, you are taking way too long on these reviews. You need to hire more staff to do the reviews. But a lot of times from the home builder side or the developer side, they don't tell the whole story. Like, we'll send out a review and red lines, and then it takes their engineer 6 months to submit the corrections. So they're mad at the city because it took us 6 months to process this preliminary plat, when in fact we had their comments or their red lines out to them within, 15 to 20 days. And then their engineer takes 6 months to get the corrections because he has so much work.
I just want to add that we at North Salt Lake, with her saying all that, just know that we really prioritize like good relationships and customer service and things like that. And so we know we're not the problem, because we work really hard to not be the problem. But she just said a very valid thing, where even with building permits, today, I've had a building permit sitting outstanding since January 10th, and no one has touched it since May when we responded and said, hey, we're still waiting on this. Today, they updated the plan, so since May, and said, we need this permit tomorrow. And I was like, I can't do that. But that's kind of how she means not telling the whole story. We get a lot of that kind of action, and yeah. We do our best to accommodate them.
Yeah, and so I think the story that's being told to the legislature is that this is the reason we don't have affordable housing, is because the cities are being obstructionists, and we are taking too long in processing subdivisions, or we are taking too long to issue building permits, when that's not the case when you really dig back in. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't bad players out there. There are, in my profession, I've met planners before that are not customer service friendly, or maybe they're following directions from their council because they want to slow growth down, and so they take extra long at some of these things, and they talk about playing the game and stuff. I'm not going to say that I haven't heard people say that before in 26 years of being a planner, because I have. But I can tell you that's not our policy. That's not the policy that comes from the top with our city council, through you guys, and also through our administrative leaders. So that's just not the way that works. I know when I started here, there wasn't a very good framework for processing of the subdivisions. And so I tried to make it like, okay, or even a conditional use permit, for example. So if somebody applies for a conditional use permit or a site plan, and I get a complete application, I tell them the deadline is 3 weeks before the Planning Commission meeting that you want to be in. We will attempt, based on our workload, it could be a little bit longer, but we will, and probably hit it 90% of the time, get them red lines within a week of their submittal, and I give them then a week to respond to those and get the corrections in. And if you respond in that week, then we'll put you on the Planning Commission agenda. If you don't respond or don't get me those corrections in a timely manner, then it just pushes them out two more weeks. And most of the developers and applicants that we deal with are so grateful to have that process in place and that commitment from us. So I'm like, I'm as committed to move this process through as fast as you can be committed to get me corrections. But if your engineer isn't responsive, or you're not responsive in getting these things and managing the expectations of how this needs to go through, then it's going to take longer. So I get really cautious when people come in and they're like, okay, well, how long will it take us to get a subdivision? And I'm like, well, you know, it might take 2 to 3 months based on this, you know, but that's best case scenario. If you guys respond back quickly and get your corrections in, it can go that fast. If you have a slow engineer who has a really large workload and he's going to sit on those for 30 to 45 days, then I don't know. I can't predict how fast it's going to take. So we try to be really proactive, because we also don't want to be overloaded with work. So it's better just to deal with it right when we get it and keep things moving. But everybody's not on that same level. And they might not have the skills. Some places you could go to smaller towns, and they've got a planner who maybe he's brand new, just out of school, hasn't done an internship, or just doesn't have the experience. And those things take time to learn. And I just know them because I've been doing it for so long that I know this is the process I like, and it seems to maintain the best relationship with the developers. So that's where we come from on those things. We try to do a good job. Okay.
All right. Thank you. And I think that's pretty clear with all the applicants when they come through, how often they comment how great the staff is to work with here. It happens all the time.
It really is different in other places.
Yeah.
I do want to just comment, I don't have the next chapters ready for you, because I will not be here in 2 weeks at that meeting. And unless we get an applicant to return his red line corrections within a week, you won't have any agenda items that night, and so the meeting might be canceled. But I will be on vacation that week, and so I also didn't have time to quite get the preliminary plat chapter done. But that will be done by the end of the week, and then I'll get it emailed out to you, and we'll plan on that at your meeting in 4 weeks from tonight.
Thank you. Any other comments or things that people wanted to bring up that we didn't discuss already on either of these? Okay, and is there anything else you need input on from us, Sherry, on these?
Nope.
Okay, so we're at APA 2023 Fall Conference.
First, we'll just do an action
or this.
Update.
This is what we're on.
Yeah.
Whatever Mackenzie put up is what we're on. I probably should ask, Commissioner Jorgensen, did you have any comments that you wanted to make on either of those?
No, I don't.
Okay, thank you.
So we just wanted to follow up with you that the plat amendment for Eaglewood Cove 1302 and 1303, that was approved by the City Council. And so they're preparing their plat to get that recorded and start working on their huge house plans. And the next item is Mackenzie's item.
Guys, the fall conference is coming up, and I am wanting to get us registered by Thursday at the latest this week, because early bird pricing is ending, and I like a discount. So I was just going to kind of see, get a filler out, if you guys know you're going to make it one day or both days. The second day of the conference, the way the agenda is drafted right now, has a section that's pretty much for citizen planners. They do it every year. One of the things they are doing this year is that Land Use 101 training that you're required to do every single fiscal year. So if you go to the conference either day, both days, it doesn't matter, and are there for at least 4 hours, you can knock out that requirement of training for the fiscal year. And then if you happen to go to that Land Use 101 course that they're offering, you can knock out that requirement as well. So there's a potential of getting pretty much your whole year's worth of training done in a day. So,
and I think it will be a really good conference because they're doing a joint conference with the Idaho chapter of APA. And so there'll be even more people there from Idaho and Utah to, you know, to talk to and see what things are different, how things are different in Idaho.
Yeah, and the agenda right now is live online. It's just drafted. They don't have who's presenting what yet, but they do have the topics, and they're very interesting this year. And it's in Ogden, so it's close-ish. Maybe I'll send out an email tomorrow morning, and if you guys can, just reply to me. Like I said, I'd like to get this done by Thursday afternoon, so if you can reply to me tomorrow, that'd be great. And we'll just go from there. Oh, and I have to say, our wonderful Meredith has now been appointed to the APA board. So I'm on the AP board, and she is, which means you guys need to come, because I'm vested in it now. And your training. That's it.
We love attending these conferences. They're really good, I think. And I think we've had some of the best representation from any city in the state. There's a lot of planning commissioners. So we're happy to have you be at this conference. I got my budget approved this year. So now I'm not going to go over budget by scheduling all of you to go to the conference. This year, every year I got to the end of the year and I'm like, they have this one little category and I'm supposed to do travel and training for 7 people on the planning commission and 4 people in my office, and I don't have enough money because I'll run out every time. This time we actually planned it all out and they got it put into the line item for the budget, so I'm super excited to have budget to do the training that I need for everybody all year long. Hope you'll take advantage of it.
Thank you. Okay, and approval of minutes from July 11th. Any comments or adjustments to the minutes? And thank you, Andrea, for your work on cleaning up the minutes always, making them succinct. If there's no corrections, we can do a motion.
Chair, I'll move that we approve the meeting minutes for the July 11th, 2023 Planning Commission meeting as written.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Second, Commissioner Moss.
Thank you. Any comments on the motion? All in favor, say aye.
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 All right, and we are adjourned.
Wow.
See y'all.
See you, Ron. Thank you for joining.
Bye.